welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 22 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. You want to improve your tennis game, don't you? I know you do, because you've taken the time to find my podcast, you found Essential Tennis, you've downloaded the file, and now you're actually listening. You're investing your time and your efforts to try to get good information that you can use to improve your tennis. By getting good information and by going out and working hard and improving your game by implementing that good information, you can be more successful. You can win more points and hit better shots and win more matches. That's my job here at Essential Tennis, is to help you win more and to improve your tennis game and your overall tennis experience. I want to help you out on your road to success in your tennis game. Today on the podcast, we are going to discuss how to get more power on your serve. We're going to talk about what parts of your body you should be using to actually strengthen and power your service stroke. Also, master racket technician Jeremy Plumley and I are going to have a discussion on lead tape and how to customize your racket by adding weight in different parts of the racket. He's got some great tips on how to improve your racket by adding weights and how to change the feel of your racket by adding lead tape in different areas.
And now it's time for the Essential Tennis Focus topic of the week.
Okay, the focus topic of the week for this week is generating power on your serve. This topic came from Tina, who wrote in, I believe, last week. And her question was basically asking for general explanation of how to create power on your serve by using your legs and your core more instead of your shoulder. I guess she was having some shoulder issues. She was starting to have some pain in that part of her body. And her instructor, her pro, told her that it was because she was using her shoulder too much and not so much the rest of her body. So we're going to talk today about the different power sources that you can use on your serve. Now, before we get started, understand, guys, that the serve is one of the most complicated, in terms of technique, strokes in tennis. It's probably the stroke that a lot of people have the most trouble with in terms of technique, and it's a stroke that's misunderstood a great deal, and it's because there's a lot of things going on at the same time. It's kind of tricky in that you get to stand there and toss to yourself, and so it kind of seems like, well, this can't be that hard. It's the only shot in tennis where I don't have to move. I can stand there. I can set the ball up to myself. How hard could this be? But it's actually quite difficult to have a high-level serve unless you've grown up doing a lot of overhand-type sports, baseball or football, where you're doing a lot of throwing. It's hard to pick up and have a high-level serve if you have not had experience doing an overhand motion previously. So what we're going to talk about today are five different areas of your body that are sources of power and acceleration on your serve. The first one we're going to talk about is legs, and Tina mentioned this specifically. The legs can be a huge source of power in your serve. This is because not only are you hitting the ball forwards, obviously, but a good service motion is actually very much an upward swing as well. The net is in between you and the box. You cannot hit directly at the box. So a good service motion has a good deal of upward acceleration and upward effort and push, as well as forwards. So to have a high-level serve, you need to effectively use your legs. Most high-level players come off the ground as they serve, and it's not because they're jumping and then hitting the ball. They're not hitting a jump serve where they're jumping up and then spiking the ball into the box. That is not the case at all. They're coming off the ground because of the huge amount of effort and push that they're using their legs to create in order to push upwards at the ball and swing upwards at the ball to get the ball over the net and then also to have the ball come down into the box again. The upward swing is what promotes the ball clearing the net and coming back down into the box. Just like on a good upper-level ground stroke where players are hitting lots of topspin, that's created by making an upward swing. And so to clear the net by a good margin and still make the ball in play, upward push is necessary. So a good amount of the swing and a good amount of the effort in a good serve is upwards. And the legs can help us with that a great deal. So to use your legs for power on your serve, after you toss or as you toss, you want to drop your legs down and bring your body weight down using your legs. And then you want to push up and make contact at the very peak of your push. What a lot of people tend to do incorrectly is they will use their legs, but they won't make contact until after they've already gotten to the peak of their push. So they'll push up with their legs, they'll start coming down again after that push, and then they'll make contact on the way down. And that actually hurts your chances of making the shot. You want to make sure that when you do use your legs and push up towards the ball, you're making contact right at the very pinnacle of your effort with your legs. Err on the side of maybe a little bit early. You do not want to push up, get to the top of your effort, the top of your swing, and then start to fall your body as a whole, and then make contact with your body falling. That's going to make it very difficult to hit a serve in the box, and it's a waste of effort. Now, secondly, is core rotation. Core rotation is a huge amount, is a huge source of power in a serve. Watching the pros play, a lot of them are making almost 180 degree rotation with their core. They'll typically set up perpendicular to the baseline as they prepare for their serve. And then after they toss or as they toss, they will rotate their core back and really almost face the fence or the back wall behind them. This creates torque with their core. They're rotating their core back further than 90 degrees to the baseline. And I'm talking about the shoulder plane or hip plane. They're about 90 degrees to start with. After they toss, they'll further rotate back. They'll make contact with their shoulders and core about parallel to the baseline. And then as they continue to follow through after contact, they'll usually finish again about another 45 degrees or even further, farther to the side. So if you're right-handed, you'll start off facing the fence to your right. If you're starting off facing the net, you will face the fence to your right, making a 90-degree turn to the baseline. Most pros will toss and then turn further to the right and partially face the back fence or the back wall. Then as they make contact, they'll be facing the net again. And then when they finish their stroke, oftentimes their core is facing to the left. So they make a huge rotational turn with their core, which is huge, guys. The core is just got massive amounts of power in it, so much more than the smaller parts of your body, such as your arm, your shoulder, your forearm, your wrist. Your core should be doing a lot of the work in most of your strokes. And rotating with your core is the second big power source on your serve. If you're not rotating very much now, you need to do more of that to create more power. Number three is the tilt of your shoulders. When I say tilt, I'm referring to the plane of your shoulders. If you just stand straight up, then your shoulder plane across your shoulders is parallel to the ground. Professional players and other high-level players tilt their shoulders back so that they're creating an angle pointing up towards the sky or up towards the ball is what they're actually doing. They're tilting their shoulders back so that they can accelerate upwards towards the ball. Number two is core rotation. That's forward momentum. They're rotating their body around and then forwards towards the net. The shoulder tilt, or creating that angle with their shoulder plane, allows them to accelerate and rotate upwards with their shoulders towards the ball. We talked a couple minutes ago about the serve being an upward swing. The shoulder tilt helps create power and strength by using, a bigger part of your body to rotate upwards towards the ball and accelerate upwards to hit the ball over the net and create rotation, which will bring the ball back down into the box again. I read an article not too long ago that was comparing different professional serves, and I guess most professional players are somewhere around 60 or 70 degrees tilted up towards the ball. And that means that 0 degrees is parallel to the ground. So if you just stand on the baseline, your shoulders are at 0 degrees. 45 degrees would be halfway to being perpendicular to the ground with your shoulders. And most professional players are about 60 degrees. So about two-thirds of the way up towards actually being 90 degrees to the ground, actually being perpendicular with their shoulders. That's a huge amount of tilt. And that tilt allows the players to load their shoulders, to store energy there. And then when they rotate back upwards and use that tilt to accelerate up towards the ball, a huge amount of strength is used. Again, using the bigger part of your body, your shoulders and your core, as they rotate forwards and upwards, creates a huge amount of power. And when you think about the shoulders and the core rotating up and forwards, along with your legs, which are, again, two huge muscles, or not two muscles, obviously there's more than two muscles at work there, but two huge parts of your body in terms of strength, when you add the legs along to the rotating of your core and the tilting of your shoulders, you've got huge amounts of strength there. Two days ago, or maybe it was 3 days ago, I went and saw Andy Roddick play in person. There's a professional tournament that is just finishing up here, or finished up yesterday, I'm sorry, in the D.C. area. It's called the Leg Mason. And I saw Roddick play, I think it was his third round match. And I had seats right along the baseline and about two rows back, which was awesome. And I got a good look at him playing in general. But I was watching his serve, and he is almost 90 degrees with his shoulders relative to the ground as he rotates and tilts back with his body. He gets huge rotation and big tilt with his shoulders to rotate and transfer the big parts of his body around and back. And that big load is a big part of why he's able to hit the ball so hard. He tilts his shoulders farther than anybody else I can think of noticing anyway, in terms of technique. And I actually went to YouTube before I started recording this episode and took a look at that. He's very close to 90 degrees with the plane of his shoulders. All right, number four power source is shoulder pronation. And that's the rotation of your shoulder from inside to outside. If you put your hands in front of you facing each other and you take your right hand and turn it so that it's facing down towards the ground, that's pronating. And the parts of your body that rotate to create that rotation or that turn with your hand is your shoulder and your forearm. They both rotate in a circle from inside to outside and from outside to inside as well, which is called supinating. Pronating is what high-level players do to create that last-second acceleration towards the ball. So a good service motion starts with the legs and the core rotation and shoulder tilt. And then as those start to push up and unwind and tilt up towards the ball and all those parts of the body start to work together and accelerate together towards the ball, the last part of the chain, or one of the last parts of the chain of effort and of strength, is the shoulder accelerating the racket up towards the ball by rotating from inside to outside, which is pronation. That creates the last accelerated effort towards the ball and is what really brings the racket head speed up to its maximum potential. And so the shoulder pronation is a huge part of the acceleration towards the ball. Now, Tina said she was having shoulder problems. So, Tina, it's possible that if you are, maybe you're not doing this part of it correctly, or if you are doing it correctly, it's possible, like your coach said, that this is really the only part you're doing well, and the rest, the legs, the core rotation, the shoulder tilt, all those things need to be implemented along with your pronation so that your shoulder doesn't have to do so much of the work percentage-wise. So you need to implement the other three parts as well. Okay, lastly is weight transfer. This is the last part of your serve, or rather the last source of power that we can use to get into your serve and to create more power and more spin. Vast majority of upper level players will finish several feet inside the baseline after having made contact. Most professional players will rock backwards as they toss. They'll rotate and coil their body. Then after rocking backwards and coiling, they'll then start to transfer their weight forwards again onto their front foot and up towards the ball. And this weight transfer aids a great deal in creating power. When you get your entire body moving as a whole forwards into the court, along with all these other rotational and pushing forces, all working together as one, that's when you're really going to get your full potential. Until you start using all of these pieces, you're not going to be hitting as hard as you could be. We could really do a full podcast easily on any of these 1-5 sources, but I just wanted to give you guys a good general understanding of how the body is used, the different parts together, in order to create a powerful serve.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com. And now it's time for Essential Tennis Gear Talk with Master Racket Technician Jeremy Plumley.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ian. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to have you on the podcast again. I enjoyed doing our first segment. I think it was a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, we talked about strings.
That's right. So, Jeremy, I was thinking about what to talk about today, and I think racket customization when it comes to lead tape and adding weight would be a topic of interest. What do you think about that?
You want to get really geeky today then.
Absolutely.
I know you
wouldn't mind that one bit, would you?
Not at all.
All right. Well, let's discuss that a little bit, because guys, when you're playing with whatever racket you've chosen, you don't have to keep it the same. You don't have to stick with the playing characteristics that it comes with. Certainly, if it feels good to you, you might not want to mess with it too much. But lead tape is a great way to kind of change the feel of your racket to something different. So Jeremy, where can we find lead tape first of all, and tell us exactly what is it?
Well, lead tape is pretty easy to find. There's several, I'm sure everybody listening has their favorite online tennis store, whether it's, Tennis Warehouse or Midwest Sports or anything like that. Any place that does a decent amount of, racket sales, and normally if they do strings as well, they'll have some customizing equipment. There's a couple of ways that you can add weight. The most common is lead tape, and really the most common ones out there are Gamma makes lead tape in either 1/2 inch or 1/4 inch thick strips. Babolat okay. also makes some. The Babolat lead tape is actually twice as heavy.
Really?
Gamma lead tape is about a half a gram for every inch of tape that you use. And the Babolat is actually 1 gram for every inch. So you'd have to use a little bit of the Babolat to get less of the Babolat to get the same results as the Gamma.
All right.
And there's also Gamma makes what's called swing weights, which are these. They weigh 3 grams each, and they look like little H's, and you would fit them in between your strings.
Okay.
And those are normally if you're just trying to add a little bit of weight up to the head of your racket, obviously. The problem with those, though, is they don't tend to stick on very well because they are pretty heavy. Lead
gotcha.
Tape itself is basically, it looks like a strip of silver tape. And you just add it to your racket.
Gotcha. So what kind of characteristics or what kind of differences are people going to feel in general when they add weight to their racket?
Well, the biggest thing is it depends on where you put it.
Okay.
If you put it up at the tip of your racket, the swing weight, the weight that it feels while you're swinging it, is going to increase more. If you put the lead tape underneath the grip or lower on the racket, you won't notice the weight as much.
During the swing?
That's right.
Okay.
If you add it over on the sides, like at 3 o'clock or 6 o'clock, it'll give you a little bit of added swing weight. It'll also give you some added stability on off-center shots. So if you're using an oversized racket, like a 110 or, heaven forbid, a 125, if you add some lead tape over to the outside edges, those off-center hits might keep the racket from twisting around in your hand as much.
Okay, gotcha. What about if, let's say I'm a player who prefers the net. I like to come to the net. I like to volley. Maybe I'm a doubles player who's always coming in. If you're a certain type of player, is adding weight to a certain part of the racket going to make more sense than other places?
Yeah, it will. If you're a net player, adding the racket, adding the weight lower down on the racket will make the racket a little bit more head light, which will give you a little bit more maneuverable racket. It'll be a little bit quicker up at the net.
Okay.
If you're back at the baseline and you're hitting mostly ground strokes, if you add weight up higher up towards the tip, it'll give you a little bit more heft at the racket head. You'll get a little bit more weight from that when you're swinging through, and you'll get a little bit more pop that way. But again, when you add weight up at the top like that, it will increase the weight of the racket while you're swinging it.
Okay. So, all right. Now, is the net difference as far as, like, I'm going to assume that obviously a heavier racket, when you make contact with an oncoming tennis ball, is going to impart more, you know, force into the contact point. Now, is the net effect between weight at the tip and weight more towards the handle the same? In other words, even though we put weight at the handle, and it might be more maneuverable, am I still going to get the same results as far as the transferred weight into the ball as opposed to putting weight towards the tip?
It'll be a more dramatic effect if you put the weight up at the top.
Really?
Okay. Anytime you add more weight to your racket, you are going to have a heavier mass.
Sure.
And you'll get more what we call plow through on the ball. The racket is going to impart more force on the ball. It'll be easier to impart that force if the weight is at the head of the racket because it's going to accelerate through it more.
Gotcha.
A traditionally weighted racket is head light. A Wilson Pro Staff or a Head Prestige. All of these are very heavy rackets, but the weight is concentrated down at the grip. So the player has to swing faster to generate the same amount of pace as a racket that might be lighter, but the head of the racket is heavier. More of the weight is centered up there.
Gotcha.
So it accelerates through the ball a little bit easier once you get it going. It's kind of like a heavy bike going down a hill compared to a light bike.
Gotcha. Okay. Another question. We had a discussion, myself and Dr. Jack, about tennis elbow a couple weeks ago. Is a heavier racket, it is adding weight to a racket that I already play with. If I'm, let's say, having arm problems, maybe tennis elbow, is a heavier racket going to absorb more of that shock and maybe help out my tennis elbow?
It will. Heavier rackets will absorb more of the shock. The line that you kind of have to walk on there, and Jack might be a better person to answer this, is if you've already have an existing injury, a heavier racket might, and, you know, again, he would be the expert here, might affect your injury more.
Okay.
So I think if you're suffering with a tennis elbow, you're probably going to want to look to other ways to alleviate that shock, maybe using a softer string, string at a lower tension, maybe using a more cushioned grip.
Gotcha.
But all things being, you know, the same, a heavier racket will give you a little bit more protection from the shock that we'll be generating.
Okay.
A lot of rackets that are very lightweight, very wide, produce a lot of shock, and that goes right into your arm. But they feel good because they're easy to swing, and they're not putting a lot of stress on your arm when you have that injury.
Right, gotcha. So basically, the more weight you have, the more the racket absorbs the shock instead of your poor arm.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, great. Well, Jeremy, thanks a lot for joining us today. That was hopefully very informative for everybody. And I use lead tape myself, and in fact, Jeremy put it on for me.
So I did a good job, too.
Darn right, yeah. I myself definitely prefer a heavier racket. I like to swing with as little effort as possible and stay relaxed. So the extra weight Jeremy has customized my racket with is definitely something that I have enjoyed. Jeremy, do you add weight to your rackets as well?
I normally tend to stay away from adding too much weight. What I do try and do, whenever I've got more than one of the same racket, there's inevitably going to be some sort of difference between two or even three of them. So what I do is I actually match my rackets.
Gotcha.
I find one of them that feels good right off the rack.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I do is I go in and, you know, I weigh them and balance them and do all that stuff and find out, you know, which one I can match the other ones to be like. So
gotcha.
I try and get all three of my rackets, which is a K-Blade Tour, a Wilson racket right now, so they all feel pretty much the same. Because even two rackets that come off of the assembly line, one after the other, are going to be a little different.
Okay.
And it varies from company to company, but some companies you might have a 7-gram difference, either heavier or lighter, from two rackets that, you know, are supposed to be the same.
Wow.
So that can be, you know, a pretty big shift. It could be almost a 0.5-ounce difference if you get a racket that is, you know, 7 grams heavier than what it's supposed to be, and then another one that's 7 grams lighter. It's just in their quality control mix.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, anything else before we wrap up?
The only thing I would say is, you know what, don't be afraid to try this stuff out. You know,
yeah.
Lead tape is not a permanent way to change your racket. There are permanent ways you can change your racket. Lead tape is not one of them. It's easy to put on. It's easy to take off. And, you know, it's something that if you get into it, you know, it can be fun to mess around with different things.
Sure.
So don't be afraid to try these things. And, you know, always, you know, ask questions. Ask your local stringer or your coach what they think. And then just, you know, just mess around with it and see what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thanks for the information, Jeremy. And if you guys do have questions, you can ask Jeremy directly, again, by going to the forums at EssentialTennis.com. Jeremy, thanks a lot for being with us today. It was great having you, and thanks for sharing your infinite gear knowledge with us.
It's always great to be here. Thanks a lot.
All right, Jeremy, take care.
You too.
Okay, that does it for Essential Tennis Podcast number 22. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today and listening to this podcast. I know that you're all busy people and you could be spending your time doing anything. Taking the time to listen to the Essential Tennis Podcast is a choice you made, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for your support of Essential Tennis. During this week, if there's anything I can help you out with having to do with your tennis game, your fitness, your equipment, your mental game, technique, or anything else, feel free to contact me through the website by going to essentialtennis.com and going to the feedback page. So until Thursday, I hope you guys have a great week. Good luck with your tennis and take care.